Man, good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's July the 20th, 201st day of the year. 164 days remain till the year's over with. Year's going fast, let me tell you. When I was 9, 10, the year took forever. Well, now I'm quite a bit older, and the years just shoot by. Well, on this day in AD 70, was the siege of Jerusalem began. Titus, son of the Emperor Vespasian, storms the fortress of Antonia north of the Temple Mount. Roman armies drawn into street fights with the Zealots. And while the Roman army was second to none in those days, in street fights, not so much. 792, Cardam of Bulgaria defeats Byzantine Emperor Constantine VI at the Battle of Marsalia. 911, Rollo lays siege to Chartres. 1189, Richard I of England officially invested as Duke of Normandy. Richard I was, if I'm not mistaken, Richard the Lionheart. 1225, Treaty of San Germano is signed at San Germano between Holborn Emperor Frederick II and Pope Gregory IX. A Dominican named Guala is responsible for the negotiations. A Dominican was a monk. 1398, the Battle of Kellistown was fought on this day between the forces of the English led by Roger Mortimer, 4th Earl of March, against the Bimes and the O'Tools under the command of Art Ogmac Marchada Caom Hanak, the most powerful chieftain in Leinster. 1402, Ottoman and Timurid Wars, the Battle of Ankara. Timur, the ruler of the Timurid Empire, defeats forces of the Ottoman Empire under Sultan Bayezid I. 1592, during the first Japanese invasion of Korea, Japanese forces led by Toyotomi Hideyoshi captured Nongyang, although they were ultimately unable to hold it. One thing to capture something, it's quite another to hold on to it. 1705, a fire in Oulu, Finland, almost completely destroyed the 4th District, which covered the southern part of the city and was by far the largest of the city districts. 1715, the 7th Ottoman-Venetian War. Ottoman Empire captures Nauplia, capital of the Republic of Venice's Kingdom of the Morea. They're opening the way to the swift Ottoman reconquest of the Morea. 1738, Canadian explorer Pierre Gaultier de Varennes at de la Vérendrye reaches the western shore of Lake Michigan. 1799, Tekle Georges I begins his first of six reigns as the Emperor of Ethiopia. 1807, Isidore Nipsey is awarded a patent by Napoleon for the Pyrophora, the world's first international combustion engine, after it successfully powered a boat upstream on the River Saone in France. 1810, citizens of Bogota and New Granada declare independence from Spain. I think New Granada eventually became Colombia. 1831, Seneca and Shawnee people agree to relinquish their land in western Ohio for 60,000 acres west of the Mississippi River. What a fool. 1848, the first Women's Rights Convention in Seneca Falls, New York, a two-day event, ends on this day. 1864, American Civil War, Battle of Peachtree Creek. Near Atlanta, Georgia, Confederate forces led by General John Bell Hood unsuccessfully attack Union troops under General William T. Sherman. John Bell Hood was an interesting man. Lost an arm and a leg in battle, had to be tied into the saddle, but he led his troops. 1866, Austro-Prussian War, Battle of Lissa. The Austrian Navy, led by Admiral Wilhelm von Tegetthoff, defeats the Italian Navy near the island of Vis in the Adriatic Sea. 1871, British Columbia joins the Confederation of Canada. 1885, the Football Association legalizes professionalism and association football under pressure from the British Football Association. 1900, an airship designed and constructed by Count Ferdinand von Zeppelin of Germany made its first flight near Friedrichshafen. 1903, on this date, the Ford Motor Company ships its first automobile. 1906, in Finland, a new electoral law was ratified, guaranteeing the country the first and equal right to vote in the world. Finnish women were the first in Europe to receive the right to vote. 1917, World War I, the Corfu Declaration, which leads to the creation of the post-war Kingdom of Yugoslavia, is signed by the Yugoslav Committee in the Kingdom of Serbia. 1920, Greek army takes control of Silivri after Greece is awarded the city by the Paris Peace Conference. By 1923, Greece effectively lost control to the Turks. 1922, the League of Nations awards mandates for Togoland to France and Tanganyika to the United Kingdom. 1932, in the Pribenschlag, German President Hindenburg places Prussia directly under the rule of the national government. 1934, labor unrest in the U.S. Police in Minneapolis fire upon striking truck drivers during the Minneapolis Teamsters strike of 1934. They killed two and wounded 67. In a strike, if you're massing, don't be on the outskirts of the group. 1934, West Coast waterfront strike. In Seattle, police fire tear gas on and club 2,000 striking longshoremen. The governor of Oregon calls out the National Guard to break a strike on the Portland docks. 1935, Switzerland. Royal Dutch Airlines plane en route from Milan to Frankfurt crashes into a Swiss mountain, kills 13 people. 1936, the Montreux Convention is signed in Switzerland, authorizing Turkey to fortify the Dardanelles and the Bosphorus, but guaranteeing free passage to ships of all nations in peacetime. 1938, the U.S. Department of Justice files suit in New York City against the motion picture industry, charging violations of the Sherman Antitrust Act in regard to the studio system. That case would eventually result in a breakup of the industry in 1948. Until then, the studio was all-powerful. They could dictate to the law enforcement and elected officials in Hollywood and Los Angeles. 1940, Denmark leaves the League of Nations. 1940 also saw California open its first freeway, the Arroyo Seco Parkway. 1941, the Soviet leader Joseph Stalin consolidates the commissariats of home affairs and national security to form the NKVD and names Lavrenty Beria its chief. NKVD gave way to the KGB. 1944, World War II, Adolf Hitler survives an assassination attempt led by German Army Colonel Klaus von Stauffenberg. 1949 is Israel-Syria mixed armistice commission brokers the last of four ceasefire agreements to end the 1948 Arab-Israeli War. 1950, Cold War. Philadelphia, Harry Gold pleads guilty to spying for the Soviet Union by passing secrets from atomic scientist Klaus Fuchs. 1950, after a month-long campaign, the majority of North Korea's Air Force was destroyed by anti-communist forces. 1951, King Abdullah I of Jordan is assassinated by a Palestinian while attending Friday prayers in Jerusalem. 1954, Germany. Otto John, head of West Germany's Secret Service, defects to East Germany. 1960, Ceylon, now Sri Lanka, elects Sirimavo Bandaranaike, Prime Minister, world's first elected female head of government. 1960, the Polaris missile successfully launched from a submarine, USS George Washington, for the first time. 1961, French military forces break the Tunisian siege of Bizerte. 1964, Vietnam War. Viet Cong forces attack the capital of Dinh Tuong Province, Saibi, killing 11 South Vietnamese military personnel and 40 civilians, 30 of whom are children. That took a lot of guts on the part of the Viet Cong. 1968, the first International Special Olympics Summer Games are held at the Soldier Field in Chicago. About 1,000 athletes with intellectual disabilities compete. 1969, Apollo program. Apollo 11's crew successfully makes the first man landing on the moon in the Sea of Tranquility. Americans Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin become the first humans to walk on the moon 6.5 hours later, as far as we know. 1969, a ceasefire is announced between Honduras and El Salvador 6 days after the beginning of the football war. 1974, Turkish invasion of Cyprus. Forces from Turkey invade Cyprus after a coup d'etat organized by the dictator of Greece against President Makarios. 1976, American Viking 1 lander successfully lands on Mars. 1977, the Central Intelligence Agency releases documents under the Freedom of Information Act revealing it engaged in mind control experiments. We're talking about MK Ultra. Also in 1977, a Johnstown flood of 77 kills 84 and causes millions of dollars in damages. 1981, Somali Airlines Flight 40 crashes in the Balad district of Somalia, kills 40 people. 1982, Hyde Park and Regent's Park bombings. Provisional IRA detonates 2 bombs in Hyde Park and Regent's Park in central London, kills 8 soldiers, wounds 47, and leads to the death of 7 horses. 1985, the government of Aruba passes legislation to secede from the Netherlands Antilles. 1989, Burma's ruling junta puts opposition leader Aung San Suu Kyi under house arrest. 1992, Václav Havel resigns as the president of Czechoslovakia. 1997, the fully restored USS Constitution, also known as Old Ironsides, celebrates its 200th anniversary by setting sail for the first time in 116 years. 1999, the Chinese Communist Party begins a persecution campaign against Falun Gong, arrests thousands nationwide. 2005, the Civil Marriage Act legalizes same-sex marriage in Canada. 2012, James Holmes opens fire at a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado, kills 12 and injures 70. 2012, the Syrian Civil War. The People's Protection Units captured the cities of Amuda and Efrin without resistance. 2013, 17 government soldiers are killed in an attack by FARC revolutionaries in the Colombian department of Arauca. 2013, Syrian Civil War. The Battle of Ras Al Ain ends with the expulsion of Islamist forces from the city by the People's Protection Units. 2015, a huge explosion in the mostly Kurdish border town of Suruk in Turkey, targeting the Socialist Youth Association's Federation, kills 31 and injures over 100. 2015, U.S. and Canada resumes full diplomatic relations after 5 decades. 2017, O.J. Simpson is granted parole to be released from prison after serving 9 years of a 33-year sentence after being convicted of armed robbery in Las Vegas. And 2021, American businessman Jeff Bezos flies to space aboard New Shepard NS-16, operated by his private spaceflight company, Blue Origin. The oldest man to go into space is William Shatner, Captain Kirk. Met the man several times. He's a bit full of himself, but a nice guy. Holidays and observances. Birthday of Crown Prince Haakon Magnus in Norway. Christian Feast Day. Ascensus. Apollinarius of Ravenna. Olerius. Ellsworth. Elijah. Elizabeth Cady Stanton. Amelia Boomer, Sojourner Truth. And Harriet Ross Tubman in the Episcopal Church in the U.S. John Baptist Yee, one of the Korean martyrs. Margaret the Virgin. Thorlac, relic transition. Wiggle Fortis, cult suppressed. Dia de Amigo in Argentina, Brazil. And Brazil. Engineers Day in Costa Rica. Independence Day celebrates independence, declaration of Colombia from Spain in 1810. International Chess Day. Lempara Day in Honduras. And in the Central African Republic, Tree Planting Day. All right, let's see what else we have. $5.14. Omistas elected as pope, succeeding Pope Zimpalaris. 1031, Henry I succeeds Father Robert II as king of the Franks. 1054, Patriarch of Constantinople, Michael Cerulaeus, as head of a synod held in Constantinople, excommunicates Cardinal Humbert of the Western Church, which is in Rome. 1304, the Wars of Scottish Independence, the fall of Stirling Castle. King Edward I of England takes the last rebel stronghold of the war. 1402, the Battle of Ankara, Angora, Ankara. Timur beats Sultan Bayezid I Ottoman's forces. 1402, Timur, his army, and 32 elephants win the Battle of Ankara during his invasion of Anatolia, capturing the Ottoman Sultan Bayezid I. That was a come down for the Sultan. 1495, French Viceroy of Naples, Montpensier, surrenders. 1498, Emperor Maximilian names Albrecht governor of the Netherlands. 1553, John Dudley, Lord President of the Council and Edward VI, captured in Cambridge. 1609, Emperor Rudolf II grants Silesian Protestants freedom of religion. 1619, Gerardus Vassius resigns as Dutch regent, state's college leader. 1654, Anglo-Portuguese treaty is reinforced. England guarantees Portugal's independence, receives trade concessions. 1712, the Riot Act takes effect in Great Britain. For 1749, the Earl of Chesterfield said idleness is only the refuge of weak minds. He must have seen Congress in session. 1773, Scottish settlers arrive at Pictou, Nova Scotia in Canada. 1793, Scottish explorer Alexander Mackenzie completes the first European east-to-west crossing of America north of Mexico. 1801, Elisha Brown Jr. presses a 1,235-pound cheese ball at his farm. Now that's a heck of a cheese ball, let me tell you. 1808, Napoleon decrees that all French Jews must adopt family names. 1837, Euston Railway Station opens in London as the terminus of the London and Birmingham Railway, the city's first intercity railway station. 1847, German astronomer Theodore discovers the comet Brorsen-Metcalf. 1849 was the start of the first Lancashire-Yorkshire clash at Hyde Park in Sheffield. 1858 saw the first fee charged to see a baseball game, 50 cents. New York beat Brooklyn 22-18. But in 1858, 50 cents was a fairly steep amount of money. 1858, the gathering of Plombieres. Napoleon III meets Cavour. Napoleon III was the Emperor of France at the time. 1861, the Confederate States Congress begins holding sessions in Richmond, Virginia. 1862, there was a guerrilla campaign in Georgia. 1864 saw the Battle of Stevenson's Depot in Virginia. 200 were killed or injured. 1866, the Sea Battle of Lissa, which was the Austria versus Italy fleets. 1868 saw the first use of tax stamps on cigarettes. 1871, British Columbia joins the Confederation of Canada. 1876, the first U.S. intercollegiate track meet is held in Saratoga, New York. Princeton wins. 1878 saw the first telephone introduced in Hawaii. In 1879, Swedish expedition headed by Nils Adolf Erik Nordenskjold aboard the SS Vega becomes the first to navigate the Northeast Passage. 1881, Sioux Indian Chief Sitting Bull, whose forces defeated Custer, surrenders to U.S. federal troops. He was a Lakota Sioux medicine man, actually. 1890, Gibbon's Stamp Monthly begins publishing. 1890, saw snow and hail in Calais, Maine. 1894, 2,000 federal troops are recalled from Chicago, having ended the Pullman strike. 1901, Morocco signs an agreement with France, fixing Morocco's frontier with Algeria, which was a French colony. 1907, a train wreck on the Pierre Marquette Railroad near Salem, Michigan, kills 30 and injures 70 more. 1911, Generals Henry Wilson, Auguste Duval, signed a plan for a British expeditionary army in case of war with Germany. 1913, Turkish troops take Adrianople and Erdin from Bulgaria. 1914, armed resistance against British rule begins in Ulster. 1917, World War I draft lottery is held. The first number drawn is number 258. 1921, second woman elected to Congress, Congresswoman Alice Mary Robertson, becomes the first woman to preside over the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives. 1922, French and British Togoland make separate mandates within the League of Nations. 1924, Tehran, Persia comes under martial law after the American Vice Consul Robert Embry is killed by a religious mob. Enraged by rumors, he'd poisoned a fountain and killed several people. Rumors, mind you. 1925, Beirut Sultan Pajha al-Atras calls Druzin for a holy war against France. I think it's still going on. 1925, Italian, Serbian, Croatian, Slav Treaty about Del Monte. 1926, a convention of the Methodist Church votes to allow women to become priests. In the Methodist Church, I think that should have said preachers. 1928, the government of Hungary issues a decree ordering gypsies to end their nomadic ways, settle permanently in one place, subject themselves to the same laws and taxes as other Hungarians. 1932, in Washington, D.C., police fire tear gas on World War I veterans who were part of the bonus expeditionary force who attempted to march to the White House. They were promised bonuses that were never paid. 1932, diplomat and chancellor Franz von Papen launches a coup against the Prussian government. 1933, Vatican State Secretary Pacelli, who became Pope Pius XII, signs an accord with Adolf Hitler. 1933 in London, 500,000 march against anti-Semitism. 1933 in Germany, 200 Jewish merchants are arrested in Nuremberg and paraded through the streets. I guess their crime was being Jewish. 1935. Well, they already covered the 1938. ILC awards Helsinki, Finland in 1940. Summer Olympic Games after Japan withdraws. And they were involved in the Second Sino-Japanese War. 1940, Germany occupiers forbid the Dutch Communist Party in the Netherlands. 1940, Nazi collaborator Rost of Tanningen appointed director of Marxist. 1941, the Guinea Pig Club forms. It was made of severely injured airmen, treated by Archibald McAdoo, a plastic surgeon at Queen's Victoria Hospital in East Grinstead in England. Apparently, he was not overly well-liked. 1942, the 1st Detachment of Women's Army Auxiliary Corps begins basic training. 1942, the Legion of Merit Medal authorized by Congress. 1943, Joint Chiefs of Staff question Admiral Chester Nimitz over the landing on the Gilbert Island. Did not go quite as planned. 1944, British and Canadian troops occupy Hill 67 in Fruneville, in Normandy. 1944, Canadian Cameron Highlanders conquer St. Andre. 1944, Field Marshal von Klug consults with the German commandant at Caen. 1944, the Flying Fortress of the 8th U.S. Air Force attack Leipzig. 1944, a heavy storm hampers British offensive at Caen. 1944, Japanese aircraft carrier Hiho sunk by U.S. air attack. 1944, President FDR nominated for an unprecedented fourth term at the Democratic Convention. Until his election, you could run it. You could be elected as many times as you wanted to be. 1947 saw the first political action of the Netherlands Army on Java and Sumatra. And in 1948, Luthez beats Bill Longson to become the NWA Wrestling Champion. And in 1948, also, Syngman Rhee elected the first president of South Korea. Well, I think that pretty well brings our little history segment to an end. You know, we've been talking about some of the bizarre things the CIA has done. And we're going to do one more show about that. You know, there's always been the rumors that the CIA was involved in drug smuggling. In the 1980s, a new wave was the cool music, big hair was all the rage. And Americans just couldn't get enough cocaine. And cocaine and Americans of all classes and backgrounds, from Wall Street to Main Street, and from the urban centers to the suburbs, and even out in the country, was getting high on, obviously came from somewhere outside the U.S. Cocaine was a processed drug derived from the coca plant, which is native to the rainforests of South America. Now, Peru and Bolivia were the first major cocaine producing countries, followed by Colombia in the 1970s. And the Colombians brought cocaine production to a new level. They organized cartels, able to control and protect their crops. They built labs to process plants into drugs. They bribed or threatened government officials and smuggled the finished product out of the country. Number one destination for South American cocaine in the 70s and 80s was the U.S. But getting there, of course, presented some problems. And this is where the CIA and some of its really way out there missions got involved. When the Communist Sandinista Party came to power in Nicaragua through a 1979 revolution, it immediately changed Cold War dynamics in the Western Hemisphere. U.S. government suddenly had a new communist country in its backyard. And American military and intelligence leaders began scrambling to figure out what happened and how things could be reversed or stopped. Clearly, in the minds of many, the CIA dropped the ball. And with that said, there's plenty of opportunities for CIA to correct things. U.S. support for the right-wing Nicaragua guerrillas known as the Contras allowed the CIA to actually fight the Sandinistas. The problem, from the CIA's point of view, was a pesky little thing called the Constitution. In 1982, Congress passed the Bolin Amendment, which outlawed U.S. funding of the Contras to openly overthrow the Sandinista government. Now, there were, of course, gray areas in the amendment, and the organization understood gray areas better than the CIA did. But the late 80s, rumors and reports began being published that the CIA was allowing the Contras to smuggle cocaine through Central America to the U.S. to help fund their insurgency against the Sandinistas. And the allegations made it clear that many American drug smugglers worked with the Contras as well as the Colombians to flood the U.S. with cocaine. Now, the CIA has denied allegations it took part in drug smuggling from Latin America, but as the saying goes, where there's smoke, generally there's some sort of fire. And in this particular case, the smoke in question was coming from a crack or freebase pipe. CIA's potential involvement in Central America drug smuggling may seem straightforward at first, but it's actually somewhat convoluted. Besides allegations of the Contras smuggling dope, their enemies, the Sandinistas, took part in smuggling, and the Colombian cartels were there to protect and profit from both sides. Now, to understand the pipeline, we have to start with Nicaragua, located a couple of countries south of Guatemala. And like Guatemala, it's historically struggled with poverty and being overshadowed and at times directly controlled by other countries. First, it was controlled by Spain and then the Mexicans to a certain extent, and later, we did. Now, due to a combination of Nicaragua's poverty, the corrupt and oppressive nature of the Nicaraguan government, and romantic allure of a revolution, the first two reasons appealed to the majority of the people, and the third was a reason for idealistic middle and upper-class youth to join. Every kid I've ever met when I was in South America wanted to be a revolutionary, wanted to be an activist, wanted to be this, wanted to be that, because it beat what they had. The Sandinistas built a large, well-organized political party and army that came to power. And it rode on the backs of this poverty and corrupt and oppressive nature of the Nicaraguan government. Now, if you're a tiny communist country in the Yankees' backyard, you're going to have some problems, no matter how much support you get from Cuba or the Soviet Union. When Ronald Reagan became president in 1981, he made going after Nicaragua one of his top priorities. Unfortunately, he had to deal with the Bolin Amendment. So to work around the amendment's stricter prohibitions, he began training camps for the Contras in Honduras and Guatemala. And doing the training for the Contras were U.S. Special Forces and the CIA. Now, the Contras just needed a supply of cash, or guns, or both, to conduct their counter-revolution. Now, the first reports of CIA might be involved in an intricate drug smuggling scheme with the Contras and the cartels became to surface in the mid-1980s. Government reports admitted some Contras were smuggling cocaine to pay for their operations, but the CIA didn't have anything to do with it. At least that was the allegation. But how did the government know the Contras were smuggling dope in the first place? Nobody ever answered that question. These reports were followed by a U.S. Senate investigation led by then-Senator John I'm the Greatest Thing in the World Kerry. His committee uncovered a bit more, including how the State Department, which essentially means the CIA, paid over $800,000 to companies actually owned by Contra drug traffickers. Now, these allegations sank as soon as they surfaced, although they quietly lingered until the 1990s when journalist Gary Webb wrote a series of articles titled Dark Alliance in the San Jose Mercury News in 1995. And these allegations were explosive, to say the least. He interviewed hundreds of people in the U.S. and Central America for his series and concluded that the smuggling operation was quite complex, but involved three major players. The two primary smugglers are Oscar Blandon and Norman Menses, who were Contras with known CIA connections. Blandon was actually arrested for smuggling large amounts of cocaine in the U.S. in 1992, and it was enough dope for him to spend the better part of the rest of his life in prison. Instead, with the help of the CIA, he got time served. A little convenient, don't you know? One of the people he informed on was a San Francisco Bay Area drug kingpin named Rick Ross. Now, Ross built his empire in the 80s by buying cocaine from Blandon and Mince's and turning the coke into crack and selling the crack to black gangs in Los Angeles. He was given a life sentence in 1996, but later had his sentence reduced and was released from prison in 2009. And although Webb didn't have a smoking crack pipe gun, that could definitely prove the CIA was helping smuggle cocaine into the U.S., it certainly looked that way. Now, despite the revelations, Webb faced strong pushback against his series. Of course, the CIA and most of the government denied everything, but what was most curious is how the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times jumped on board to deny the allegations. And then Gary Webb was discovered by his wife, dead in their suburban Sacramento, California apartment, December 10, 2004. Investigators found he had died from two gunshot wounds to the head. Not one, but two. And that coroner immediately ruled it a suicide. Now, if you shoot yourself twice, that is a very determined suicide. Many believe his research only uncovered the tip of the iceberg. The truth is the CIA's involvement in this crazy scheme went much, much deeper than anybody could possibly imagine. And Rick Ross wasn't the only American civilian to get involved in large-scale drug smuggling from Central America, possibly more than likely under the watchful eyes of the CIA. Louisiana pilot Barry Seal's story also seems to implicate the CIA in some major drug smuggling. And Seal's life was going great in the 60s when he was a Barry Seal, that is. Well, young and upwardly mobile pilot with TWA, but then he was busted trying to smuggle some explosives into Mexico. He got fired as a pilot by TWA, but somehow avoided any other legal repercussions. And he avoided a lot of legal repercussions throughout his life. Almost like he had a guardian angel hovering over him. Now, angels may exist, but they aren't particularly known to favor drug smugglers. So to find out who was protecting him, you need to do a little bit more digging. After losing a job at TWA, he turned to drug smuggling, which landed him in a Mexican prison for a brief stay. And as bad as those prisons are, he managed to make plenty of contacts with Central America and a notorious American smuggler. Got the hiccups. Named Roger Reeves. Now, Reeves hooked Seal up with Colombian contacts, including drug lord Pablo Escobar. With the contacts he made in Central America, he now had a drug pipeline that extended from Colombia into Mena, Arkansas. Now, how does Mena, Arkansas get involved, you might wonder? Well, he kept his planes, at a small airport in Mena, Arkansas, which Reeves also claimed was one of the points where plenty of cocaine was brought into the U.S. under the CIA purview, and all the while the future President Bill I Didn't Inhale Clinton was governor of the state in the 80s. Now, the CIA's admitted to a two-week exercise it conducted at Mena in the 1980s, although it's denied any drug smuggling. And if you think it's been wild up to this point, oh, it only gets better. Seal was arrested, tried, and convicted of drug smuggling in 1984, but avoided prison time by working with the DEA and the CIA. His primary mission was to collect evidence on Escobar and his associates, which led him into Nicaragua that year. Well, it turns out the Contras weren't the only Nicaraguan smuggling dope into the U.S. Sandinistas had a deal with Escobar to smuggle cocaine on Seal's planes. The DEA later claimed they intercepted the only load of dope that Seal smuggled in from Nicaragua, which may or may not be true. What's known knows that an American general gave a public speech mentioning how the Sandinistas were involved in drug smuggling in the U.S. And that speech effectively burned Seal as a CIA asset, although he continued to work for the DEA in the U.S. until he was gunned down by Colombian hitmen in Baton Rouge, Louisiana in 1986. All the evidence indicates the killers were associated with Escobar and the Medellin cartel, but there was probably few tears shed for him at the CIA, as he was clearly a loose cannon. And just like the allegations of CIA drug smuggling in the Golden Triangle, thanks to plausible deniability, the complete truth of the CIA's involvement in Central America drug smuggling will probably never be known. One thing's for sure, though, as crazy as the situation in Southeast Asia was, what took place with the Contras, Sandinistas, Colombians, cocaine cowboys, and CIA was even more bizarre. You know, as part of their ongoing program to protect all their craziness, the CIA became very adept, I guess I should say, at watching everybody. Now, one of the craziest, maybe most disturbing of the CIA programs didn't involve bizarre methods of torture, experiments in mind control, or the use of sex and drugs to get information. No, this truly bizarre CIA program involved the CIA's ongoing digital war on its enemies. These missions don't involve guns or bombs or poisons, but viruses, Trojan horses, and electronic devices. And despite the lack of traditional weapons, these CIA missions have inflicted just as much, if not more, collateral damage. We're talking about the CIA's undercover army of computer hackers. Since the early 2000s, CIA has been at the forefront of the technology curve. They employ more than 5,000 computer nerds who've written more than 1,000 malicious computer programs that can steal files, disrupt programs, and watch you from your TV even when the TV's turned off. As a result of this program, Big Brother really is watching you. Now, the CIA's computer hacking program are under the division known as the Center for Cyber Intelligence, or CCI, which for the most part remained unknown until March 2017 when activist Julian Assange and the WikiLeaks organization began releasing a series of documents known as Vault 7. I've read a few of those. Quite interesting. The documents elaborate on all the various programs, viruses, other technology CIA has at its disposal, and demonstrates that the agency has access to the newest and craziest computer technology in the world. And as crazy as it might seem that the CIA has an army of hackers at its beckoning, what makes this whole thing even crazier is the CIA, the preeminent intelligence agency in the world, which many believe is on a par with the KGB or the FSB, or even MI6, lost much of this technology. And you heard me right. While CIA operatives are busy playing hacker, the electronic monstrosities they created were stolen and unleashed on the world. Now, I don't know about you, but to me that sounds crazy. The Vault 7 documents released by WikiLeaks were immense and some say quite damning toward the CIA. That's if you've ever heard about them. Now, although the Vault 7 documents were reported in the mainstream American media, they got minimal attention and almost no analysis by the mainstream media. It's almost as if the major media outlets had a nothing-to-see-here attitude toward Vault 7. But there was plenty to see and a whole lot to read in the Vault 7 documents. The Vault 7 documents included thousands of pages of top-secret CIA material relating to cybersecurity from 2013 through 2016. They were released periodically in 24 dumps, beginning with Year Zero and ending with Protego. The document dumps reveal the CIA can pretty much access any computer or electronic device it wants, and that the privacy is something that's an afterthought at best. For instance, Umbridge is a collection of tools and techniques the CIA learned and stole from hackers around the world. Umbridge is UMBRAGE. It's a program. And some of the tools included webcam capture, password collection, and data destruction. In other words, Umbridge gives the CIA the ability to log into your computer, erase your files, and watch you on your webcam as you melt down seeing what just happened. It also gives the CIA the ability to place compromising files on a person's computer. See, yeah, you really wanted to get rid of somebody without having to kill them. All they have to do is create a hidden file of criminal activity in it, such as terrorism or their favorite, child porn. See, they could then approach the target later and tell them to quit doing what they're doing or they'll go public with the file. I mean, let's face it. assassination's not really in vogue. Cyber blackmail's much cleaner, more effective, and keeping up with the technology, so to speak. But there's more. They say it can track our movements through our smartphones, which we always carry, and capture data from our phones. But the craziest of all the CIA cyber tools is something called the Weeping Angel. It's a code name for a hacking tool that allows the CIA to monitor you through your smart TV. The program requires somebody to install it on the TV with a USB stick, but that only takes a few minutes, and an officer can be in and out without the target even knowing that they've been broken into. And once the program's installed, the CIA can gain access to the TV's microphones and cameras. Other documents released show the CIA has been studying how to remotely control cars. I'm talking about the ones we drive, not toys. And also internet routers. If you check, if you have internet through your cable company, there's a router sitting in your house. Now, all this is pretty crazy, but the reality is most people weren't surprised when the Vault 7 documents were released. I mean, after all, this is the same organization that dosed random people with LSD, tortured people for information, overthrew foreign governments, and spied on their own allies. So, in actuality, the ethical bar wasn't set very high to begin with, to put it mildly. What makes all this even crazier and quite ironic is how little security the CIA placed on all these weapons and tools. It turns out that the CIA hackers pretty much lived in a world of their own, all but ignored the standard chain of command. The end result was that the CIA lost control of the majority of its hacking arsenal, according to one LeakyLeaks note. I guess that's what's happened when you have to hire civilian hackers, because all your people with intelligence and military experience are boomers who need help to turn on their computers. So, in this particular case, you have something and you lose it, so what's the result? Well, since the CIA will probably never reveal all or even most of the facts, we can only guess, but since these cyber weapons are now loose, pretty much anybody with minimal computer knowledge can attain and use them. Terrorists, organized crime groups, and hostile state actors now all have access to these hacking tools. Nobody's safe. Just the sort of thing that instills confidence in the CIA of the future. Well, over the last few shows, we've talked about around 20 of the most amazing CIA missions of all time. Some of these missions the CIA did were crazy. Some were brutal, like the Phoenix program and Operation Condor. Others are just plain insane. I mean, who in their right mind would think about dosing random people with LSD? Who would think that was a good idea? A lot of CIA officers did. And better yet, what would the CIA officer really think when they came up with the idea of using sex dolls as decoys? I guess they figured during the boredom of stakeouts, if you got a sex doll handy, you can amuse yourself. And if there are things that we take away from this trip through CIA land, this odyssey through cloak and dagger, is that over the CIA's not so long history, it's demonstrated the ability to think way outside the box. And sometimes that unconventional thinking resulted in some brutal missions. Other times it led to some totally funny operations. In fact, the CIA was so far outside the box at times that as laughable as a game show host being a CIA contracted assassin might be, the more you think about all the crazy things the agency has done, it makes perfect sense. And as you move forward into the 2020 decade, there'll be more crazy revelations revealed about the CIA. As the CIA and all the other deep state alphabet agencies gain more power through some of the surveillance equipment techniques that we've talked about, they'll keep pushing the envelope. So you need to be careful that you don't become a victim of the CIA's next crazy mission. You know, there are, of course, numerous CIA programs that really boggle the mind. You know, at this point, I'm going to turn from our show. what we've been talking about. And it's no secret I'm a disabled veteran. And I watch disabled veterans being abused and by the VA itself. You know, one of the big secrets was the use of Agent Orange in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. We're told it was used in Vietnam as a defoliant. And then after a lot of brouhaha, well, yeah, we did in Thailand. Oh, we didn't tell you, we did in Korea too. Well, there's a bill in Congress to address the use of Agent Orange in the country of Panama, specifically the Panama Canal Zone. I'm told it has about a 2% chance of passing into law. And the Army's fighting tooth and nails to keep from having to admit not only was it stored at Fort Clayton in the Canal Zone, but it was used in the mosquito control program. I remember in the evenings watching clouds so thick you couldn't see through it of spray from mosquitoes roll through the quarters areas. And my former stepson actually died of a brain tumor that may well have been induced by his continued exposure to Agent Orange. Now, veterans who were exposed to Agent Orange or other herbicides during service might be eligible for a variety of VA benefits, including an Agent Orange registry health exam, health care, disability compensation for diseases associated with exposure. Their dependents and survivors may be eligible for benefits. We had no idea the widespread medical problems that could be caused by the unrestricted use of this material. If you're seeking service connection for one of the diseases the VA presumes is associated with exposure to herbicides during service, the VA requires four things. A medical diagnosis of the disease, which the VA recognizes as being associated with Agent Orange. And then I'll try to cover some of those. Competent evidence of service in Vietnam or at or near the Korean Demilitarized Zone during the specified dates. Or Agent Orange exposure in a location other than Vietnam or the Korean Demilitarized Zone, if you can prove it was there. And competent medical evidence that the disease began within the deadline, if any. Now, if you believe you've got a disease caused by herbicide exposure, but that disease isn't on the list of diseases associated with Agent Orange, you can still apply for service connection. And if that's the case, the VA requires four things. Competent medical evidence of a current disability. Competent medical evidence of an actual connection between herbicide exposure and the current disability. Competent evidence of service of Vietnam or at or near the Korean Demilitarized Zone during the dates that have been specified. Or Agent Orange exposure in a location other than Vietnam or the Korean Demilitarized Zone. Now, these claims, of course, are much harder to prove and require a detailed opinion from a doctor showing that the nexus link between your disability and Agent Orange. Now, the VA does offer, when the doctors involved get off their dead ass on their dying feet, they offer health care benefits for veterans who may have been exposed to Agent Orange or other herbicides during military service. Now, there are a number of ways a veteran can qualify. Serve in Vietnam between January 9, 1962 and May 7, 1975. That even now includes service aboard a ship that operated in the inland waterways of Vietnam or landed on shore. And the VA even has a list of U.S. Navy and Coast Guard ships that operated in Vietnam during that time period. Number two, have a military service-connected disability. Now, if you served in Vietnam or another area where Agent Orange was sprayed, you might be eligible for an Agent Orange Registry health exam. You don't have to be part of the VA healthcare system to take part. It's a free, voluntary medical exam to track the special health concerns of veterans who may have been exposed to Agent Orange during their military service. Now, the VA's War-Related Illness and Injury Study Center provides clinical expertise for veterans with deployment health concerns or difficult-to-diagnose illnesses. It's a tertiary care center, and it partners with the referring providers and their healthcare teams to support the care of veterans. It's part of the VA's post-deployment health services, a VA-delivered foundational service. And most of their work is fundamental to VA's mission, is rarely found outside the VA. There are three of them: Washington, D.C., East Orange, New Jersey, and Palo Alto, California. But to be get an appointment with the War-Related Illness and Injury Study Center, you have to be enrolled in and receiving VA health care and be referred by your primary care physician. Now, veterans may be eligible for disability compensation if they have a disability related to Agent Orange exposure during service and were discharged under other than dishonorable conditions. And monthly payment rates are based on the veteran's combined rating for his or her service-connected disabilities. These ratings are based on the severity of the disabilities, of course. Additional amounts are paid to certain veterans with severe disabilities, called special monthly compensation, and certain veterans with dependents. And there are compensation tables you can find on the internet. Children with certain birth defects and that are actually biological children of Vietnam-era veterans with qualifying service in Vietnam or Korea are also eligible for VA compensation, health care, and vocational training. That's something to think about. These herbicides affect future generations. Something to keep in mind. Well, on that note, we come to the end of today's show. Run out of time. We'll be talking more about things like this in future shows. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.